Cade. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and yes, as a matter of fact, I'm still here on Capitol Hill, still at the AIC headquarters, one last task to get accomplished before I can head home. That's probably going to be Wednesday morning, so hopefully we'll have shows tomorrow night, and did I say shows? Hope there's going to be a program tonight. There will hopefully be a program tomorrow night, and Wednesday is iffy. But I will try to make it home in time to do that as well, and hopefully we can just have five nights of something approaching relatively normal broadcasting. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. The easiest place to go simply by pressing Listen Live to get the program. Of course, there are a wide variety of other streaming outlets, streaming platforms. The apps for your smartphones provided by TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Internet Radio are both quite effective and quite handy. Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku devices, goodness gracious, we are getting around. You can go to iTunes for the podcasts if you wish, or you can simply get the podcast address by going to the subdomain for this program over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And you know what? I don't know. Just a minute. Do I have the Moran Monday music? Let me check. Oh, yes, I do. And primarily the reason I ask is because I have a feeling we are going to be needing it this evening. That's right. Hurry. Step right up. Step right up to this little cybernetic tent standing right behind me here on the electronic radio device. This is Moran Monday on the Horn. And remember, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. They're a grabby little bunch. We've got Morans for you this evening. We've got paranoid Morans, right-wing Morans. Well, they're all right-wing. Well, not always. I can't forget about that little love fest that some alleged progressives have for Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. But no, we've got them big and small, old and new. Folks need to hang on to their bags and keep a hand on their wallets. The Morans can get a little bit grabby from time to time, but by and large, and without fail, head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in Morans. That's right. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And I gotta tell you, I'm feeling a little proud right now. I really am. I ran across this audio earlier today, and it almost brought tears to my eyes. It really, really did. All these years of us sitting around our little conversational space and talking back to the right wing. No, I didn't have anything to do with this. No, it's not directly related to me by any stretch of the imagination. But it's one of those matters of whispering, you know, maybe it's the payoff pitch for whispering into the ear of the universe for so long. it's also a darn good reason to remember why Massachusetts and Boston are such wonderful, wonderful places. Because they have people in them who still can tell from Shinola and make the correct choices in almost every instance. So, there you have it. But no, what am I getting at? Well, I'll tell you. Apparently, do you remember Jimmy Jeff Ganny Guck? Jeff Gannon, Jimmy Guckert, Talon News Service, the guy who was on Hot Marine Corps Studs for Hot Military Studs for You.com. Yeah, that was it. And he was posing as a journalist, and he got into the White House, into the White House briefing room time after time after time. He was all over the sign-in sheets and everything, and it turned out he was just a gay prostitute with a notepad. Oh, the heady days of the Bush administration. I remember them well, don't you? Well, there's another cat out there who's working that side of the street. I don't mean the gay prostitution porn side of the street. I mean the pretending to be a journalist side of the street. Apparently, if you go to Alex Jones's website, you can be an Alex Jones cub reporter just by saying you are. And that's the case with this goofy-looking, about half a skinhead named Dan Badondi. Badondi doo 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 doo. Badondi doo 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 doo. No, this is the idiot that asked at the press conference in Boston a couple of weeks back, "Is this another one of those false flag operations?" So he gets his little handy cam and his InfoWars microphone, and apparently had cause to show up in Boston to ask some sort of question. It's a crowded scene. There's kind of a press gaggle going on. And that's when everything went sideways for Dan Badondi. Badondi Donk. It turned into a very bad day for Dan Badondi in Boston, because a native Bostonian, sounds like a native at least to me, somebody who claims to actually live there, pushed back against the weirdness and idiocracy that is daily peddled by Alex Jones. Hurts my throat to do that. I can't do it for very long at all. Selma Diamond's love child. Because you know that those freaks over there are peddling the notion that, oh, among other things, we didn't land on the moon. Pick one. And now the Boston Marathon bombing was a false flag operation that was perpetrated by the FBI. Right. So lo and behold, this individual gets all after Dan Badondi. Badondi, 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 Badondi. It sounds like something that happens with a rubber ball. Badondi, 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 Badondi. And a wall, a rubber. Ba-da-boomp, 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 ba-da-boomp. I used to stand outside the house for hours on end with a tennis ball instead of a baseball, just fielding grounders by throwing them against the side of the wall until my father would say, "Listen, son, I love baseball. You love baseball. We want you to be a good baseball player, but please, for the love of God, stop that." Ba-da-dondi, 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 ba-da-dondi. Where was I? No, it made my heart swell with pride. Here's this guy in Boston, and I don't even have his name. If I had a chance, I'd shake his hand and thank him for this. So he's got his little InfoWars microphone thingy on his microphone, and he's got his little handy cam on a tripod that's about 9 times too big for it. And Well, I'll let you hear the what went down. This is beautiful. This, and the other thing is, I'm really tickled to be able to play this simply because nobody else in for-profit media can. This cannot go out over the public airwaves because, after all, it has words in it that might shock the children. And what will we tell the children? And then it'll be chaos. And, you know, I don't know what we're going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200. And, I mean, it'll atonal music, right? But these are still the interweb tubes. And we can play words like this. Now, if little Timmy and little Cindy are in the room, this might be a good time to call them into the kitchen for a cookie and a glass of milk, because this Bostonian does not hide his light under a barrel. He really lets us know what he thinks of Alex Jones and Matt Bidadondi, 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 Bidadondi. Stop it, boy. Yeah. Let's all just enjoy.
Tell me what it is.
Dude, don't put your camera in my face.
I'm not putting it in your face. It's nowhere near you. I don't care, dude. This is my neighborhood. Who the fuck are you? You're trying to what? You're trying to, like, put more right-wing conspiracy theories? You're not covering what's going on here. Your boy said this was a false flag. The bomb that blew up people was a false flag. What is that supposed to mean? No, the FBI's behind the bombing. That's what you're here to cover. And that's why I'm the asshole. Because the FBI blew up those people at the Boston Marathon. That's right. That's because you're a dope. And what you say is dangerous, and people like you shouldn't be able to drive a car, much less espouse your opinions in public.
Ooh.
But we have a First Amendment, we gotta protect it. But you're an asshole, and so's Alex Jones. You're welcome. And that's the nicest thing I can say about you, you son of a bitch.
Yep. Anything else you gotta say?
Yeah, I just said it.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Keep going.
Yeah, I'll keep going.
Yeah, come on.
But wait for you to say something come out of your fucking mouth that isn't retarded.
You're on camera everywhere.
I don't give a fuck.
You're the smart guy. Yeah, tell
I am the smart guy. Because I'm not standing here saying the FBI blew up the people at the Boston Marathon, you fucking shitheel.
Go, man, go.
I'm not telling people the FBI blew up the Boston Marathon, but you're saying that. So why don't you tell everybody you're saying that? Because I don't care who thinks, I don't care if people think I'm an asshole. I'm not saying the FBI blew up innocent people. You're saying that. And that's what makes you a dumbass.
Oh, yeah?
So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Why are you in my fucking neighborhood?
Because I want to be.
Yeah. You're unwelcome in this motherfucking neighborhood. Yeah. Go tell everybody what you think. Tell everybody the FBI blew up the Boston Marathon. No, you just said the FBI blew up the Boston Marathon. So why don't you own it and stop being a pussy?
Oh, yeah, I did say that.
Don't be a pussy, dude. Tell everybody. I'm sure everybody here loves to hear that the fucking FBI blew up the Boston Marathon. You dumbass.
We got the photos of proof.
We got the photos of you got shit. You got jack shit. You got your dick in your hand. That's what you got. You fucking asshat.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can you explain why is this so I can use it? Can you explain me, because I am a common person that don't understand.
What do you want me to explain?
Explain me why you insulted.
Because he said the FBI blew up the Boston Marathon. That's retarded.
You're insulting somebody.
What's that, man? And you're a mumble mouth. That's what he thinks. He just said it. Don't take it back now, you son of a bitch. Own it.
Explain it for other people. So what he's
a nudnik. He's a right-wing conspiracy nudnik. This guy is dangerous. He doesn't belong here in Cambridge where people have half a fucking brain. He belongs crawled up someone's ass in Alabama.
No. I'm tired of the point, man. You're
dude, whatever. Just keep running your piss flaps.
What else you got to say?
Dude, that's what I've already used that line on you. How dare you? You're using my material now? You fucking unoriginal son of a bitch. I know you don't have an original thought in your brain, so don't try now. It's like watching a 5-year-old try to read. It's embarrassing. You ought to be ashamed.
My 5-year-old can read.
That's cool. It's because is your child from Cambridge?
No.
Okay.
You're drinking your fluoride.
You drink a dick, dude. Go ahead. Go ahead. Look for a kid to hide behind. Yeah. You bastard. How dare you? You should be ashamed. Go look at their conspiracy bullshit. Look at your fake pictures. Alex Jones is, what is he? He's your Jim Jones, what he is.
I don't need to reply. You already make a point.
Should we just devote a moment of silence to that? I'll send him flowers, chocolates, a little, you know, thanks for participating trophy. There's nothing to be gained by being nice to right-wing jackasses. That was a beautiful thing. Now, I know, we may have some kumbaya types, and certainly in the progressive world at large,
it doesn't do any good whatsoever to use those words. It just lowers us to their level.
You know what? And yeah, I know what Mark Twain said about wrestling with a pig. Yeah, don't wrestle with a pig. You both get covered in mud, and the pig likes it. But that guy just got badondi, 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 badondi. Stop it! He just got taken down. He just got decredited. If that young man, and I'm assuming he's young, if that young man had not been there to do that, there are people in that crowd who might have actually thought that badondi, 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 badondi had some credibility. But instead, he would. That audio is living proof. True, Lottie. That was not East Bostonian. That was more like polite Cambridge. Would the F words have been up by a factor of 10 or something if that had been true East Bostonian, Lottie? But as you know, there are times in which foul language can take on or can rise to the level of an art form. And that was one of those moments. Granted, there were some references to sexuality there that I could have done without, but it's the language of invective, and I guess we can't expect everybody to refer to a badondi 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 badondi, stop that, as a neo-maxi zoom dweeby. But that was vulgarity raised to the level of an art simply because it was freighted with so much honesty. Apparently this is striking a chord. A note coming in from Jim next to Eleanor Roosevelt. I love dirty talk with a real message. And Michael writing in, can we have an encore later for the tape recorder? Vocabulary aid. Just wonderful. If you want to find this, it's over at rawstory.com, and it's featured on the top banner right now. But I've already, even as I'm sitting here talking, I have fired the link off to about 12 people. Bob, I got to have that. So going out to two of our Michaels. It's big with Michaels right now. But just because we're starting with this, don't assume for a moment that that's all there is. Oh, by the way, 20 minutes past the hour, and just a little bit of a reminder here. It is the 29th day of April. April has roared through and is now rapidly coming to a close. And I should let you in on the fundraising status. We are... Well, we're not in as bad a shape as we could be. If we can raise a little bit more than $300, we can close out the month of April at the old fundraising goal of $2,500. It would take about $800 to actually get us to the $3,000 mark. But believe me, the way things have been, I'm thrilled. And it means that we, hey, look, we get May. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and the traditional mail address is there also, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Yeah, Marty, I know. You know what Marty writes in and says, you know what the Jones-type guys are going to say about that guy, right?
He's obviously an FBI plant who's been brainwashed.
Of course he is. Somebody called George Norrie. God, is life not complicated enough? I mean, honest to God, is life not complicated enough without imagining garbage like,
oh, it's a false flag operation. It's the FBI and the New World Order and the gay Illuminati and the Bohemian Grove and naked dancing, and somebody tell me where it is because I want to see it.
Yeah. Life is complicated enough. I mean, it was late last night, and I go out for a breath of fresh air from time to time here, just to walk around, and you know what? I walk a lot more when I'm here than when I'm home, frankly, and it's probably better for me. I forget who it was the other day said, Bob, when you walk, it's like how other people run. And I went, that's cute, isn't it? Yeah. And then I realized I do. If I'm in get there mode, my walk, because I've got kind of a long stride, not a wide stance, but a long stride, is very near to some people running. And I just enjoy the heck out of it. But anyway, so I walk out last night. I wonder what the is going on here, because up at one end of Constitution Avenue, they've popped up the big metal barriers. And down at the, you know, just probably 30 feet from me, there's two Capitol Police cruisers sideways in the middle of the street with their lights going and everything. And I'm thinking, hey, there's nothing. I mean, yeah, really, there was nothing, no traffic, no nothing. And so I'm hoping that, you know, they use Sunday nights for drills just to make sure. Because, you know, things like those pop-up barriers, you want to make sure they work and everything. But I could have looked at that and I could,
Obviously, they're out at midnight, so no one will see them as they're preparing their next false flag operation.
Life is complicated enough, and we have evidence of that of that complication all through the evening. Go over to Truthout. It's a little bit. It's probably a little bit too much to go into on the program because there's a lot of background and everything. But over at truthout.org, there's a fascinating article by David Rosner and Gerald Markowitz that appeared in Tom Dispatch. And it's an opinion analysis piece. But it's simply titled, How Americans Became Exposed to Biohazards in the Greatest Uncontrolled Experiment Ever Launched. And I clicked on it because that's the nature of what we're working on here with the AKE Act, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, AKEACT.org. And I'm working on one last project before I go home because it'll be at least a couple of weeks before I can come back here. Although, fact of the matter is, I need to be back here next week, but But yes, in point of fact, the authors are correct. A hidden epidemic is poisoning America. The toxins are in the air we breathe, in the water we drink, and in the walls of our homes and the furniture within them. We can't escape it in our cars. It's in cities and suburbs. It affects rich and poor, young and old. And there's a reason why you've never read about it in the newspaper or seen a report on the nightly news. It has no name and no antidote. how industrial toxins entered the American home, how Americans became exposed to biohazards in the greatest uncontrolled experiment ever launched. Well worth your time reading. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob. Subject line, profanity. Hey, Bob, reminds me of a Christmas story where Ralphie said his father worked in profanity the way other artists worked in oils. Yeah, this guy's good. I could go, if I played it again, it would be gratuitous, but this is for the ages. Because you know what? Every profanity-laced, invective-laden thing that this guy offered up by way of a descriptor of Bidandi, 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 but stop it. And his boss, I don't know, is there a check involved? Is somebody getting paid? Alex Jones was true. Absolutely unblemished, unvarnished truth. And personally, I think a little more of this, and we might be better off for it. You know, not just used toward an obvious moron, this being Moran Monday and all, an obvious moron like this Bidandi guy, but against, you know, the fat Tony Scalias of the world. And the Inhofes. And any number of various and sundry assorted right-wingers. What comes to mind? Let's see. Where did I see that? You know about the law that was introduced in Washington State last week that would allow people to discriminate based on sexual orientation. And it has stirred up no small amount of controversy, and rightly so. Really? We want to use the laws of this land to enshrine discrimination in the 21st century? I mean, this is 2013, not 1813. But yeah, in Washington State, some right-wingers do. One of the co-sponsors of the bill in Washington State is a guy by the name of Senator Mike Hewitt. Now, this is a bill that would allow someone to say, refuse to serve you at a lunch counter if they thought that you were gay, and serving you at the lunch counter would be a violation of conscience. Right? So one of these activists writes to Mike Hewitt, Ripiglican, and said, what are rural gays supposed to do? Because, you know, some gay folks are rural. What are rural gays supposed to do if the only gas station or grocery store for miles around won't sell them gas and food because they're, you know, gay? Here's the answer. Well, gay people can just grow their own food. Gay people can just grow their own food. And I guess they can just drill their own oil. Because, you know, the question was, what are rural gays supposed to do if the only gas station or grocery store for miles around won't sell them gas and food? Grow your own food. Or, more particularly, starve! Right? Now, with a Senator Mike Hewitt, or anybody who backs this kind of the jingo-laden, faux legalistic filth, some of us would like to say, well, you know, we just need to educate. We just need to do a little bit of outreach and some education, and, you know,
Squirrel Neck over here will bring his guitar, and I'll bring a tambourine, and we'll sing some Kumbaya, and we'll change their hearts and their minds.
All right? No. No, what we need for the likes of the Mike Hewitts in the world are a few more of these folks like this guy in Cambridge, who will stand up and use the language of the street and just make them wear it, make them own it. So, naturally, Mike Hewitt is a Christian, and he's got him some family values. But at the end of the day, Hewitt's staffer, whatever that person's name is, suggested that it is completely all right in the United States of America that has... What? Oh, yeah. A 14th Amendment that guarantees equal protection under the law, which means you cannot have laws that directly discriminate against other people. But the answer somehow is to shun them from society based on legal stuff. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe after a while, we just need to push back a little bit better. I get the idea that this guy in Boston probably has a future on tour. Yesterday, being Sunday, we went walkabout a little bit up in, just to see the sights and walked up. Like I said, I do a lot of walking here. I like it. And walked up into Eastern Market on Capitol Hill. And we found a guy standing outside one of the display areas who was trying to cut it as an insult comic. So he was offering free insults or free arguments. It was like something out of a Monty Python skit. I kept moving. That was my day off. I was off the clock. But just as a for instance, you listening, Beth? Texans? Sergi, are you listening? Yeah. Dr. Rick? Anybody? Dr. Allen? Just as a for instance, I'd like to see this guy subsidized to go down and, for instance, or maybe come over here to Washington, maybe, and just kind of have an impolite conversation with, say, Louis Gohmert. And let lots of people... Because what we're talking about here, and I'm not trying to overstate the case, but what we're talking about here is ultimately the same thing that happened when finally, a couple of generations ago, people got tired of listening to the bizarre ravings of Eugene McCarthy, blathering on and on about commies here and commies there, and I have in this folder a list of known communists. And it all finally fell apart in this instant.
Let us not assassinate this lad further. Senator, you've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
I know this hurts.
Have you no sense of decency? And that was said very politely. But the fact of the matter is, one might argue that perhaps once upon a time we lived in a more polite country. But for the batshit crazy Bachmans and the Godzilla from Wasilla's and the Louis Gohmerts and the Steve Kings and who Steve Stockman, he's a rising star in the loony bin. Sorry, that's probably a little improper, but that's not yet well. I'm sorry, my bad. Not Eugene McCarthy, Joe McCarthy. Did I say Eugene? Yeah, dear God, Jim, what would I do without you to catch those Fox passes? I didn't mean Eugene, I meant Joe. And then Darlene writing in, Bob, don't we have McCarthy to thank for bringing Ronnie and Nancy together? Put that on the list. We'll get some professional swearing in on that as well. But you begin to wonder, I mean, really, wouldn't you pay, honest to God, wouldn't you pay good money just to see someone look at Louis Gohmert and say, you're crazier than a sprayed roach, you dumb bastard? Because I know I would. Morons and dangerous into the mix. Hard to evade. And it's probably a real tarnish on my kumbaya meter. But I would... it's like these little love fests on TV on Sunday when for reasons known, well, that are more perplexing to the universe than, say, dark matter, you know, why you wind up with John McCain or any of the fall-to-all goofballs, the George Wills, and oh, dear God, we were out Saturday and I saw Charles Krauthammer. Really. Because you know what? There's nobody else on this planet that looks like Charles Krauthammer. And I just stood there going, what? But, you know, there he went. There he went rolling along. And just, you know, the hatefulness just sort of vaporizing off of him and... Quick to the restroom. I don't want any Krauthammer molecules on me. Ugh. But you know, he shows up on things like that. And I guess I'm asking on this Moran Monday, I guess I'm asking, in a time when people say, you know, what we need is more civility, I don't see our side being particularly incivil. And I don't see the other side getting civil anytime soon. Maybe my thesis is all wrong. But like I said, I heard this guy. I heard him. And if it hadn't been so such an utterly otherwise disgusting thought, I would, honestly, I don't know. You almost kind of want to, in the middle of this, you kind of want to pot up Lee Greenwood or something. I'm proud to be an American.
And so is Alec Jones.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And that's the nicest thing I can say about you, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Anything else you got to say?
Yeah, I just said it.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Keep going.
Yeah, I'll keep going.
Yeah, come on.
But wait for you to say something come out of your fucking mouth that isn't retarded.
You're on camera everywhere.
I don't give a fuck.
You're the smart guy. Yeah, tell
I am the smart guy. Because I'm not standing here saying the FBI blew up the people at the Boston Marathon, you fucking shitheel. I'm not telling people the FBI blew up the Boston Marathon, but you're saying that. So why don't you tell everybody you're saying that? Because I don't care who thinks, I don't care if people think I'm an asshole. I'm not saying the FBI blew up innocent people. You're saying that. And that's what makes you a dumbass.
Oh, yeah?
So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Now, why are you in my fucking neighborhood?
And I'm proud to be an American. Yeah. I am. I am looking for that, Michael. If you've got it handy, send it along, please. Michael is about 3 miles ahead of me out there in picking out bumper music, and he knows that I'm looking for it, and I don't have it here. Oh, here. Maybe if I work really, really fast. Because it is. It's the perfect. It is the perfect bumper music to this. Saturday, when we saw Charles Krauthammer, we saw him at the baseball park. We went into the cheap seats and then went walkabout afterward, trying to get a little bit better view of the game, where the players didn't look like they were, you know, the sizes of matchstick men. And it was a tribute to our military heroes day or something like that. Cincinnati Reds went down in defeat 6-3 to the Nationals. I was rooting for the Reds. I had to, because I had the spirit of my father with me. But anyway, at some point in time, they wanted, you know, we had to stand and. We had to stand and sing God Bless America or something before we were allowed to sing Take Me Out to the Ballpark, Take Me Out to the Ball Game. I guess it's a thing. I don't go to enough baseball games to be able to say one way or the other. But as Ferg pointed out, and this is very true, another moment came along when they were playing, you remember the 80s classic by A-ha, Take On Me? There were more people singing Take On Me than were singing God Bless America. And yeah, for a good, during the tribute, they were giving out free little Made in China American flags. And during the tribute, we were all supposed to be waving our American flags, and damned if they didn't play Lee Greenwood. And Ferg looks over at him and goes, "Dad, you got to sing it. Not this song, boy. Oh, no, sir, not this song."
We stayed seated.
Yeah. So, yeah, more people sang Take On Me than sing. Right. Oh, no worries. No worries, Michael. I've got it now. We are all set. Jim said, "This guy is truly eloquent. He reminds me of an NCO I knew getting his point across to trainees to save their lives." So, yeah, only I don't know, maybe not listening. That's true. There may be more depth in Jim's comment there than initially meets the eye, deep though he usually is. Maybe not listening to Alex Jones might someday save a person's life. And that is certainly worth contemplating. You know, because, you know,
get your dried foods and your freeze-dried dinners together and your water purification tablets and meet me in the bunker. The FBI is coming with another false flag operation any day.
And, you know, you could wind up, you know, I don't know.
Guyana's lovely this time of year.
So... Betsy, you're gonna have to elaborate just a little bit. I'm trying to sort out which side of this issue you're on. She says, she asks, which laws do we ignore? The kosher lunch counter closed on the Sabbath? Well, the fact of the matter is, refusal of accommodations on the basis of religious grounds or on the basis of race, Right. That's all pretty much covered under Section 1983 of the U.S. Code now. The question is sexual orientation. So, you know, that's the nature of the question. But, yeah, this is the perfect bumper. I'm glad you were ahead of the game, Michael. This is the perfect, perfect bumper for exactly what I think I'm getting at, if I'm getting through at all.
I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong.
I mean, it's absolutely perfect. Will Kimbrough.
I'm trying to be less polite.
Oh, I didn't expect it to start playing all over again. Dadgummit. Oh, it'll be fun. But well, we could listen to it twice, but nah, not really. No, Will Kimbrough from the album Americanitis and Less Polite. Perfect sentiment. So we are about 10 minutes before the hour. We'll probably take our top of the hour break a wee tad early. So let me check. hey, Patty. Under the subject line, Will Kimbrough. Patty says, I play this whole album at least every other day. I know, it's positively infectious, and probably need to be playing some other... Man, there's some seriously thought-provoking tracks on the whole thing. So, listen, a little bit more good news, and again, we're trying to reach the fundraising goal for the month. We're racing toward the finish line here. We've got a little over $300 to raise to get to the $2,500 mark, and that'll be awfully nice if we can. Nothing happening yet, but that's not to say that it won't. But no, I was going to say some good news. Agnes is screening calls, as it were. It's not like you're not going to get through. But she's Agnes is answering calls in the home studio, and she's able to filter them through to me here. So if you want to reach the program, and you haven't been able to in a while, and I apologize for that, but if you want to get involved in the program, if you want to have your say, a little, you know, a little talk, then merely dial 304-658-3333, and that'll get you into the program straight away, and Agnes will let me know that you're on the line, and it'll be kind of neat and cool to actually know who's on the line at any given time. That's what happens when Agnes is answering the phones instead of me just sitting there punching buttons onto hold. So 304-658-3333 will get you into the program, and we will take a little bit of a break and get things squared away for the second hour. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Grab. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Indeed, indeed. 7 o'clock straight up here in Washington, D.C., up on Capitol Hill. At the headquarters of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. AKACT.org is where you want to go in order to take action, real grassroots action. No AstroTurf here. Real grassroots action to help us advance the AKACT and get some degree of justice for the tormented of Appalachia. I had an email earlier today from Gary, and he was writing. Now, this is part of correspondence that he had sent elsewhere, but I think it merits mentioning in this context. This is what he writes about mountaintop removal in his advocacy. He says, what we have created and are continuing to create in the Appalachian mountain communities are what Chris Hedges so aptly coined in his book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, sacrifice zones. Those areas in America that have been offered up for exploitation in the name of profit, progress, and technological advancement. But these are real people, and their lives, health, and families are being ruined every day by mountaintop removal. And they're not calling for a stop to this totally destructive process. All they're asking for is that if there will be any permits granted for mountaintop removal, then an honest scientific impact study should be done prior to the granting of the permit. If the study shows that no lives will be lost, the health of the community will remain intact, and the environment will remain clean and safe, well, then the permit will go forward. But if lives will be lost, the community will suffer, and the environment will be damaged, then the permit will be rejected. Is that too much to ask? Studies have shown that mountaintop removal is not even economically sustainable. A report cited at SourceWatch states that a study co-authored by a West Virginia University professor reports that coal mining in Appalachia costs 5 times more in premature deaths than the industry provides in jobs, taxes, and other economic benefits. According to the study, the coal industry creates about $8 billion per year in economic benefits for the Appalachian region, but even using conservative estimates, the cost of premature deaths attributable to coal mining is valued at approximately $42 billion. Please urge the congressman to sign on to co-sponsor the AK Act. And that's how it's done. By the way, just to let you know, a little something neat going on down in Fort Worth. Over the weekend, our buddy Sergi went to a street fair there, and Sergi has The spirit was moving him. And he said after a full day of chalking, and what he was doing was writing promos for the horn on the sidewalk in colored chalk. He said, after a full day of chalking yesterday and doing some new chalkings today, I hatched an idea, one that would test how effectively I'm getting the word out about your show and the horn around Fort Worth. So what Sergi wants to know, he says, I mentioned the fact that he's been chalking the walks. And so if it turns out that you've seen any of Sergi's chalkings and you're a new listener to the program, well, we always welcome first-time callers, and, well, as long as you're not a right-winger. But first-time callers of good faith and good conscience and goodwill are always welcome on the program. So if you've seen any of Sergi's chalkings, give us a call, 304-658-3333, and join in the program. And, Sergi, thank you very, very much for what you're doing, for trying to get the word out there. He said, it's my goal to help out as much as I can, and you're one hell of a good host. Thank you, Sergi. He says, you and the rest of the Horn family commune help keep me sane. He says, I'm dedicated to spreading the word about the show. Thank you, Sergi. Thank you very, very much. And so with no further ado, well, let me do this then. Let's get everything going the way it's supposed to go. And if you are on hold, please stay that way, and we'll be to you presently. I'm connecting to the home studio now. And we are connected. Are you there, Agnes?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, let's see. Hold on here. Let's go to Bill in Cleveland.
Good evening, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm well, Bill. How are you?
Surviving all right. Just telling your gorgeous wife that I've been out at a few jam sessions, and people thought they were looking at a zombie when I got up there. I thought this guy was, Anyway, it's fun to play. My voice is, I feel like the Tin Woodman. I need a can of oil and Malarnix, but that's the way it goes.
Well, you know, that oil often comes in 80 proof, 90 proof, sometimes 100 proof, Bill.
Yeah, I used to like Tanqueray or beetroot oil myself. It was one of the, if you want to sing like an old blues musician, you drink gin, of course.
Absolutely.
I got to congratulate you tonight. That was one of the funniest things I've heard in years.
Oh, I wish I was responsible for it. I'm merely the messenger, Bill.
Oh, just playing it, though, Bob. I mean, God, it was that good. There's a big rock and roll club in downtown Cleveland now, and what used to be a Woolworths. And in the Woolworths basement when I was a kid, you go down there, and there'd be a guy, a Billy Mays, trying to sell people stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Can openers, potato peelers, you name it. And along would come some wise guy from the audience trying to shut him down. And the thing is, tonight the wise guy from the audience just tore that guy a new whatever. It's about time.
That's the thing. It was a beautiful thing. The first time I heard it, I was beside myself, and it felt like someone had written tonight's show for me. He wasn't nervous. He was frustrated. He was full of a righteous fury, but he wasn't screaming. It was magnificent.
Truthful humor, or things that have come out of humorous when you shut down a moron, is, you know. Just, you can't do any better than that. It's about time somebody has said something. And I was playing a couple of weeks ago and came home and tuned in a Boston radio station, which remained nameless, but I think you know which one it was, you know, on the Internet.
Yeah.
And I heard the tail end of that whole shooting match when they caught the two fellas. And it's so sad because the to me, what the guy's, beside starting out with dealing death, Mandy, you're reaching the wrong audience on top of it. I mean, what do they expect from that? Because most Americans have no concept of what's going on over there in the their home state. If you ask most people about it, they say, huh, what? But you start throwing bombs indiscriminately, people are going to say, what? Who did that? Why? But Jones, with his constant harangue of paranoia, just what we need in this country is more paranoia.
Right, because we ain't got enough right now.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know, it's just good to hear you. I know you've been down there, and I suppose there's idiots down there who think that what you're talking about is paranoia. I wish you could put them in front of those photographs and such that you guys have and let them see it. I have friends up here who are bragging to me down east and north due east of Cleveland, and not Lake County, but the southern counties below Lake. I know a couple of people who have sold land to these blow up the earth guys, and think they're getting a good deal.
Well, that all falls under that general heading of what our buddy in Wisconsin refers to as igum foo. I got mine. F you.
Yeah. You hit it on it. I got a kick out of you tonight. Gene McCarthy. I said, oh, again? Heck, I never knew that guy was that way.
Joe,
I'm pretty familiar
with. Yeah, no, I listen, it's getting to the point that I can't be trusted to use my own brain anymore.
Well, you've been using your brain in such a tremendous area, and it's got to be, you got to be pouring out emotion on this one, too. Because this just isn't a great thing to be trying to do. It's your own backyard. It's your own family. It's your friends' families. And that does put the heat to you.
Oh, see.
It's got to be fierce.
I'm not going to sit here and do poor, poor, pitiful me or anything. Oh. But, yeah, it's tiresome, Bill. I mean, I can't remember the last time I had a weekend. I can't remember the last time I didn't have to be somewhere, because the work's got to be done, and there's just not a heck of a lot of people who can do it. And we're running this whole thing. I mean, I guess I'm kind of used to it. We run the horn on a shoestring, and this thing's running on a shoestring too.
Yep.
And it's one of those, and I'm terribly. Well, I don't know. I feel like I'm on the couch and you're the shrink. But I feel kind of
conflicted. You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, Napoleon, when did this start?
But I need to be at home. I need to be dealing with things at home. The show suffers when I'm inconsistent. The program suffers when I'm inconsistent, because if I'm not here consistently, people tuning, oh, he's not here, well, yeah, whatever. And
well, I'll tell you what, me and a few others who I'm close to, we do miss the hell out of you when you're not there, because that your show, I hate to use the term either. I hear this from a lot of kids. How does your show work at the band? I said, well, it was a hell of a show when my pants fell off. You know, That was the funniest part of the show. I hate the term show. It's a musical performance. When it was not a show to us, it was, you know, go out and do. Okay, if you're opening for somebody at a big club like we did those Grandy Ballroom stints, and you know, and when the hell was that? 60 something, 63 maybe. Could have been 63. Or 68. What am I saying? 63. I'm getting to a point where I don't know what freaking day it is, Bob, so don't feel bad. it's you're up against the wall. I mean, when you come home and you see the rusty bath water and you see your kids carrying water to school, that's the pressure is worse. You know, it's not like that. I mean, you know, for most of us, we know what it's going to do, but you see what it has already done. And that's and how you can convince people that these people are robbing us, no pun intended on my part, blind, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it, or much, except what you're trying to do. It's like illuminating people who already know because they're profiting from it. They got to fake like they're hearing you. They got to fake like they're listening, some of them. But I'll tell you, this guy in Massachusetts, as I say, all it reminded me of was a guy shutting down a pitch man. And it's about time somebody has gone after this, what's his name, that guy?
Alex Jones.
Yeah, you got it.
That hurts to even do, Bill.
Where the hell did Jones come from? Did somebody open up the portals of hell one day and...
No, I think so. I don't know. I think, well, I'm not going to get all nasty on the...
What's his career been?
I heard of him several years ago, and he was out there on the Internet, and he was blathering about, space aliens flying out of his butt and stuff like that. And then, what really happened, though, Bill, is that during the George W. Bush administration, a lot of people got suckered into thinking that he was a progressive.
Yeah.
And because, he would go on and on about George W. Bush and the New World Order. And people, he must be a progressive. I'm going to listen to him. And the next thing you know, here we are. But it doesn't, he's such a weirdo. It doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter who's in control of the Congress. It doesn't matter because there will always be some shadowy something lurking in the corners, really doing all the business. The fact of the matter is, what this guy is a modern day Father Coughlin, he's probably worse than that, because what he does is he uses 21st century code to work some of the same nasty anti-Semitic stuff that was going on in Henry Ford's day.
Yeah. Well, I have some problems with modern day the state of Israel in our time, at times with Netanyahu, etc. And my first wife was Jewish and her family Orthodox. My sister-in-law studied medicine there.
Yeah, but thing is, Bill, having an issue with the way Israel treats its neighbors, having issues with the way that Israel's government is run is not the same thing as sitting there and saying that there's a worldwide Jewish banking conspiracy that's going to sooner or later make slaves of us all. And that's the stuff that was being peddled. Well, remember, Henry Ford had his own newspaper to do nothing but that.
Yeah, wasn't he running out of Dearborn?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, what was it, the Dearborn Independent or something like that? Right.
I'm glad to hear you wish you would speak a little about Coughlin to educate people who aren't really hip to the guy.
Well, I kind of assume that everybody knows who Father Coughlin was. He was a Roman Catholic priest who got behind a microphone on, I believe, the NBC radio network, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And hated, he just hated everybody.
Yeah. Got to a point. He broke with Roosevelt at one point, too. And I guess finally when he broke with the president, his superiors told him to quiet down. A guy that teaches a lot about the author of the Amos Walker detective series, whose name, Lauren Esselman, he has written so much about Detroit that goes back as far as 1900 that you picked up bits and pieces about people like Coughlin and what they did. And in fact, he talks about something happening in a nuclear plant up there in the Detroit area that wasn't real healthy. That I never heard anything about, but it might have happened, and we don't know about it. Because sometimes things that, like in northeastern Ohio here, one county east of me, they've got a tremendous problem with the Big H. A friend of mine's daughter is involved with that poison. and other people that I've known out there, other younger folks.
Oh, God.
But you don't hear a thing about it in the Cleveland newspapers. And that's one county away that this poison is showing its face. And, you know, I had friends in the 60s, four of them, who got messed up with that stuff. I remember being in a room with a buddy of mine, borrowed my belt so he could tie it around his arm. And he offered me this stuff, and I said, are you out of your mind? No, thank you. I'm weak enough as it is. I'm messed up now. Why do I want to be worse?
But yeah, that sounds like me and acid. You know, I just came to a conclusion that my reality was weird enough. I didn't need to alter it.
Yeah, I had read a little bit about acid before. Again, I was a hair older than those guys, and in you know, being born in the middle of a war instead of a boomer, a few years here, a few years there. My biggest evil was the Lone Ranger and the Green Hornet and Sergeant Preston every night on out of a small radio station in Detroit. You know, those radio programs were great. You needed a good sound effects man and people who had good radio voices. You never saw what they looked like.
Well, see, that's the nice thing, because Alex Jones could never have found work in that era.
Oh, he's got a
voice made for print.
Yeah. Yeah, and his face, I don't know if it's, maybe his face is better for radio than the rest of them, but, but I'll let you go, but I'm glad to, I wish people would give a little history on some of these characters, but I think most of the listeners to this station happen to be hip enough to pick up on it, but man, the junior grade morons that are out there listening to him, but this guy, I'd like to give him an award for shutting that guy down like an all pro hockey defenseman or
just hip checked him right into the boards.
Actor, you know, he just shut him down, and it's about time somebody speaks up. And because I mean, look, Bob, I can buy almost, the government is capable of a lot of things. Those of us who sat in our easy chairs on a Sunday morning in November of 63 and watched Lee Harvey Oswald get shot in the stomach by a guy who, how in the hell did he get into the police station at that point?
Right. And, you know, frankly, with regard to that general time frame and those events, Bill, I think that if that had been handled in a more open and transparent way, if the country had already not been in a total lockdown of anti-Soviet paranoia, for instance, we might not have seen other paranoid things blossom the way that they did. But we saw in that instant the fact that our government was not transparent, was not open to us, and it persists to this day. The story that came out over the weekend about the scads and scads and scads, I mean, bags, literally bags of money being periodically dropped off and given to Hamid Karzai in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
While we're holding lotteries to throw 4-year-olds out of Head Start, you know, that's the kind of stuff that makes you kick furniture and use words a hell of a lot worse than any that young man in Cambridge used.
Well, and our veterans of Afghanistan are coming home to, you know, the ones that are getting out of the service are coming home to not much of anything. And that's pretty sad. The one thing I like to point to is the college graduation in this country after World War II hit the highest that had ever been in our history because of the GI Bill. And I'm afraid now that there's a lot of these schools that are springing up, so-called trade schools and such, to grab the GI money.
Oh, there's, it's not just that, to grab the student loan money, to grab the grant money.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how it is that anybody, and then again, I don't wonder, Bill, because there is a desperate urge. People want education. People want to learn. They don't necessarily just want a skill. They want their world expanded. They want higher education to do what higher education is designed to do. And lo and behold, the free market has stepped in there and said, come to University of Phoenix. Come to
the
draw spunky school of economics or You know, things you find on the back of, right. Well, the University of Phoenix is.
MacBook, yeah.
No, these are online scams. I mean, one of those mills was operating in Beckley, West Virginia for a time. It was called Mountain State University. My, that sounds impressive, doesn't it? And they had a real physical campus. They had a brick-and-mortar campus. But they were taking any money that would come in the door, and if you had a pulse, you could get admitted. They were ungodly expensive. They were private. And they were turning out people. I remember hearing a horror story from a few years ago about some kids who got jobs as they were chemistry majors, and they got summer internship jobs and looked at a test tube and said, "What's that?" And looked at an alcohol burner and said, "Huh?" And they were absolutely useless to the person who hired them as interns. And at the same time, they were being told that, "Oh, yeah, you're going to have a marketable skill."
Yeah. Well, I'll leave you with one good laugh. I don't know if you remember the ads in the back of magazine from some school of English. I can teach you to speak, blah, blah, blah. And it was a correspondence course. And I believe it was either Mad or one of the other humor magazines took that ad. And the way they wrote it up and started out, "I can learn you to talk good already." And, you know, it just went on from there to be worse and worse use of language.
That's so funny because the call sign of the first radio station I worked at, and it's no secret, was WBTG. And supposedly it stood for "We Broadcast the Gospel." But before long, a couple of the smart alecks and I who worked there, we'd pretty much figured out that what it really stood for was "We Barely Talk Good."
Well, I'll let you go. There's probably a lineup behind me. In fact, there is, and a couple of them are armed. I got to get out of here. I'll talk to you, man. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Night, it's awful man. Good to talk to you, Bill.
Good to talk to you. Take care.
Bye now. And that was Bill calling from Cleveland, our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, who is apparently out doing gigs. If you're somewhere in the Cleveland area and you get a chance to go hear Bill do what Bill does best, stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Agnes, is Jim still with us?
Yeah. How you doing, Bob?
Oh, pretty good, Jim. How about you?
Oh, I'm just sitting here trying to sound butch.
No, you're not sounding butch. You're sounding Alex.
Oh, God, that fool.
Hurts, don't it?
I'll tell you, that man who's... Thank you for the link, and that entry into the program tonight was just... Oh, God, it was just marvelous.
It was cleansing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It expresses the way I talk to some of these people who call me up with some of these bullshit schemes. I'm not kidding. I have gotten so many of these calls about this, that, and the other, you know, these come-ons, and I'm supposed to be off this telemarketing thing and this, that, and the other. You just get tired of it.
Oh, we've got a landline phone here in the AIC headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, I can't remember the number of times that thing's rung and it was actually somebody calling us. I'd say 40% of the calls are the Washington Post trying to get us to take a subscription. And the rest of them are telemarketers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, pursuant to your last caller, y'all covered a lot of ground, and I'm not going to cover that again because I certainly agree with what was said. But this business about, for example, the dinner last Saturday night, mm-hmm. I thought the president acquitted himself very well.
He's good in those instances.
Would you like to have a drink with Bitch McConnell? The only drink I would like to have with that son of a bitch is a urine sample of my own. Give it to him.
I was thinking more about what, who was it, Lady Violet Asquith, or perhaps Lady Astor, said to Winston Churchill, "Sir Winston, if you were my husband, I should give you poison." And his response, of course, was, "Madam, if I were your husband, I'd drink it."
Got it. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was just marvelous. And I wish you could have heard Martin Bashir this afternoon let Sarah Palin have it.
Really?
Oh, God. mendacious, self-serving, stupid, and he said, the NRA needs a new president, and she ought to apply for the job because the other guy, LaPierre, is just the vice president. Oh, he just laid her ass out.
And who was this?
Martin Bashir.
Oh, yeah, over on MSNBC.
Oh, I love him. He's just wonderful. I mean, that's just part of my day. I always have to listen to what he has to say because, you know, what he has to say makes such a great deal of sense. He's extremely lucid and so erudite and well-spoken. I think a great deal of him. And Chris Matthews, too. God knows he was going on about it, too.
Oh, I have to say that where Chris Matthews is concerned, I frequently have a hard time watching him without the addition of, you know, some sort of potable.
Well, you know,
because I remember when George W. Bush was giving him a tingle down his leg.
Well, I think Chris has come a long way since then. I don't know. Maybe so. That's just my opinion. But he, Martin Bashir, certainly let Sarah Palin have it, who had sent some real nasty tweets or emails or whatever about the Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night. And it was just filled with all kinds of vitriol, and she was talking about these asshats, this, that, and the other. Just typical Sarah Palin.
Well, she's just a nasty thing. Of course, I also caught Tom Brokaw's excoriation of the Correspondents' Dinner. Did you see anything about that?
No, I don't listen to him.
He's declared that it is beneath the dignity of the Fourth Estate to be swanning around, and he specifically said that the real nadir of it all came when Lindsay Lohan catapulted her celebrity status by an appearance at the Correspondents' Dinner.
Lindsay Lohan? I wonder how she got out of the Who's Gal to even get there.
She may not have been in it yet, but it has become a place to see and be seen, much like the Academy Awards now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a big deal, and, you know, it's definitely a time for people to let their hair down and just basically tell people what they think and, you know, and react in a jocular, good-humored way to what's been being pumped out during the past year. But I thought the president did very well. I really do. And,
well, you know, they're more than happy to. Well, you're the one who coined the phrase, Jim. This is the Forbidden City, and that's the kind of the White House course. But well, what do they call it? The Geek Prom, and I think that fits nicely.
Nerd prom.
It's an example of the sort of Forbidden City phony baloney bonhomie that happens around here. I mean, this place has, and I mean no insult to exotic dancers, this place has all the genuineness to it in many instances of a strip joint.
Well, what did Harry Truman say? When you're in Washington, if you want a friend,
get a
dog. Bring a dog. Yeah. And speaking of D.C., if you like the Eastern Market, and if you're in town during Labor Day or thereabouts, I would suggest that you get up to Adams Morgan.
Oh, I've heard a lot about up there, but it's tough to get to simply because the schlep to the metro from here is about three blocks down to Union Station, and then then once you get up there, Adams Morgan's not even that accessible to the metro. You still got to hike after you do that.
I think the last outpost you're going to get is the Red Line, DuPont Circle.
Yeah, thereabouts.
And, you know, get a cab or something else. But, you know,
Woodley Park.
It's a great street there, and there are lots of wonderful things. there. You know, just lots of wonderful foods from all over the world, and it's a very diverse area up there, Columbia Road, and in the area. Just a suggestion.
Oh, it would be well worth taking in, and you know, I have a feeling I'm going to be here a lot more.
It's called Adams Organ Day. Look it up on the calendar. It's right near Labor Day. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So it happens at a specific time of year.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the first Saturday before Labor Day. Someone there, if you can correct me, it's been a while since I've been. But I always had a wonderful time when I went.
And that sounds like a lot of fun.
Lots of neat people there.
Well, one of the things we know for sure, I was looking at the congressional calendar, and these people have actually decided to work during the months of June and July, which is surprising. And then they knock off next to nothing in August, and not so much.
Well, that's not. I'm not surprised at all, because I mean, you know, who in the hell wants to be in Washington during August? Because that's not exactly a pleasant time. I mean, it's hotter than hell and humid, and all the heat from the summer seems to have built up from all the concrete and marble around you. It's being let out all at the same time.
Oh, it feels like you can wring the water out of the air itself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they put back, and I think it was back, I was reading a book called Washington Goes to War by David Brinkley, which is a wonderful expose of Washington and what happened during World War II and stuff like that, when they first installed air conditioning in the Senate and House chambers. And he goes into a lot of the stuff like that and how, you know, that had changed the temperature, literally and figuratively, of government at that time. But it's a good book, Washington Goes to War.
Oh, I love walking, and some of the stuff I've tried to impress upon Ferg is to get him to try to see this place through the generations and tell him, you know, what wasn't here when and what was.
Well, you know, Bob, the metro doesn't go everywhere. It goes a lot of places. It goes much further now than it used to. But sometimes there are things worthy to see when you just got to pay the money and get a cab if you have the money, or there are buses and things of that nature.
Yeah.
There are means of transportation, and, you know, they're worth spending the money for. That's just
absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you know, this past Saturday was just a perfect, perfect day. Not a cloud in the sky. And so we came from the ballpark and went up through Barracks Row and up into Eastern Market and just had a beautiful walk. And you couldn't have asked for better. And of course, I'm in love with all the old late 1800s architecture on Capitol Hill, those row houses. And
well, you need to get up into Northwest and, you know, D.C. and get up around George Washington University. That's where you need to go.
I've never actually been up that way that much, so yeah.
Oh, my Lord, I saw The Exorcist this weekend, and I can remember going up there when I used to have to go to GW for workshops and stuff like that. I'd just get in the car and drive and go right by The Exorcist house and the Father Karras steps. Remember the steps?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's there's a lot up there, right? You know, right above M Street, going, and of course, just take a left. If you're coming across the Key Bridge, just take a left on Wisconsin, and take the first left in Prospect, and there you are. And now they've made it sort of a big thing.
And the car's in the driveway.
Yeah, and there's an interesting place next to it, and it used to be the car barn where they kept the trolleys. It's a Rococo type thing, brick, and it was then owned by the Lutherans Synod or something like that. And I took pictures through the windows, and there were all these folding metal chairs next to it, and by each chair there was a pole light with a naked light bulb on it. And I've still not been able to figure out the hell that was about. But it's mentioned in Blatty's book, The Car Barn, the Rococo Car Barn, and right next door is that brick Georgian And, of course, when you get lost in the area of that D.C., you're dealing with the cave dwellers, those people who've lived in D.C. all their lives. Georgetown, it's wonderful. Because, I mean, Georgetown was a tobacco port when Washington was nothing.
Right. It was its own community that was subsumed into the district itself. Georgetown is considered to be a different town.
It is, and it's a wonderful place. Just if you can't afford to live there, it's nice to walk by and look at some of the stuff and the Barton Oaks. And we've had this conversation before, but I just wanted to call in and let you know how much I appreciated that diatribe from that gentleman from D.C. And I think I've been mentioned in emails that you've read. So there it is. And by the way, as a request, if you can do it, I don't know if you're of the mindset or not. If not, that's okay. A dedication to Sarah Palin. And who's that woman, Michelle Bachman?
Yes.
The Girl Can't Help It by Little Richard.
No.
I'll guarantee you one thing. The reason I'm saying this, I received this Facebook thing from my sister. And she takes her dog to church.
Okay.
And I could just think of my dad, how he would roll over in his grave. And they had a big article in the local paper about that, of my sister sitting there with her dachshund. Which I think is nice. I mean, I haven't said anything to her about it, except I did request on her Facebook that a formal dedication to my sister, Mrs. Penny Anderson Fulham, that you play Little Richard, The Girl Can't Help It.
Well, I'm going to look and see if I can find it.
It's there. And it's hilarious. Remember that? It was an old movie with Jane Mansfield and Tom Ewell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember the picture of Marilyn Monroe when she's getting her skirt blown up, the guy next to her?
Yes.
That's Tom Ewell.
Okay.
But it's just, the first time I ever heard that song was in a theme movie by John Waters called Pink Flamingos, when Divine was walking up some street and doing all kinds of crazy things. And, this was just a live shot of Baltimore. And there were these people just watching Divine strode up, walk up the street. You've seen pictures of Divine, haven't you?
Oh, gosh, yes.
And there was one guy with a glass eye, and it popped out. She was such a sight. But anyway, John Waters, I'm not making a whole lot of sense tonight. I've got a bottle of Campari here I've got to crack open because of that thing you played earlier. That's all there is to it. And I have sent that link around the world.
Have you really?
I sure should have. Because that's exactly what I think some of these people need to hear. I mean, I used to be one of these kumbaya people who say, oh, well, now, can't we sit down and reason together and this and the other? These assholes don't want to reason together.
No, and that's, Jim, that's something you understand that I've been going on and on and on about lately, or for years, is that
it's the fair way of the highway.
Right, and when you walk up on somebody who's been swilling the stump liquor in the summer heat and, drinking two or three comatose yellow jackets along with it, they don't care to have a conversation with you. They're either going to best you or you're going to best them.
That's it. And sometimes it takes a little more than that with some of them. And I've had conversations like that with people. I really have. And by the way, one other thing about these education institutions that you and the previous caller talked about, and I love to hear that old gentleman, he has a lot to offer. Are these schools, these Maxwell U schools and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
I used to manage education programs for the Army before I moved to D.C. And some of the stuff and the outrageous fees that they would charge, promising these guys they would have this, that, and the other. And I would have to vet these schools and just see exactly where they were and see if they were accredited and this, that, and the other. It's just incredible how much money they steal from the American taxpayer.
Oh, isn't it?
I'm telling you, it's just a, I would tell these people, when I would talk to them and finally find out what the skinny was, I said, if I have my way, you're going to jail.
Yeah, you'd like to see that.
And there were a number of them put out of business, too. Certainly were. Because, I mean, you had to sign off on a DA Form 2173, which was, what, $2,000 for a semester? That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
And these people are just getting it cheek by jowl, and they're giving these poor people who are absorbed by it absolutely nothing. And then they can't pay the money back. I used to manage a student loan repayment program. Used to have to deal with the same thing of how many people have gutted the Treasury of the United States government in the name of false education, because that's exactly what it is.
The thing is, Jim, you only find out about it when it comes time to start making the payments and you realize that you've got a degree that is worth absolutely nothing.
That's right. Now, I've heard that from a number of people who've taken in by the MSU.
Right. I was going to say a perfect example of that is Mountain State University. We're talking about people who were running up $250,000 in educational debt. And then they went belly up, and the degree was worth nothing. The credits were not transferring. And it turns out the guy who was running the whole show was running it as a cash cow.
And why his ass is in jail, I don't know.
Well, that's one of the, you know, there's that old saying out there, Jim, that a good prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich in front of a grand jury. Well, this guy's maybe it's because he's no ham sandwich and he's got lots more dough than he does ham. But it's the way of the world. Or it's the way this country apparently now works.
Oh, I know. People think you can buy anything and sell it. You can't do that. You can't buy education. Education is something that has to be bought. It has to be bought and earned as well. And it has to be a legitimate type thing. If not, you've got a bunch of idiots around holding pieces of paper that are worth absolutely nothing, not even to wipe your behind on, you know?
Yeah.
That's about as graphic as I can be in honor to your first thing tonight, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I'll say that again. But if you have the chance to play that in honor of those two idiots, I think you might get a good laugh out of it.
You know what? I've got the track all queued up. As soon as we're done here, we'll take a little break and have a listen.
Well, bless your heart, is that guy used to say in that old James Bond movie. Who was that guy who played him, the Las Vegas guy? Wayne Newton.
Yes.
Did you ever see that movie?
No. No.
When he ran this false religious thing?
No.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the one with Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. Now I know.
The Living Daylights.
Because I kind of like Timothy Dalton as James Bond. I thought he made a good Bond.
Me too. I mean, when I first fell in love with Timothy Dalton when he was in the movie with Eleanor Aquitaine.
I was going to say when he played the young King of France in The Lion in Winter. Right.
Right. Philip VII, whatever. Well, listen, let me get off here. And if you have a chance to play that, just do. It'll be a good hoot. It's not long, and I'll leave you in peace.
All right. You take care, Jim.
I'll try.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
And that's Jim calling from not too awfully far from the home studios themselves. I'm told by Agnes that the lines are open, 304-658-3333 if you want to take a run at the program. And per Jim's request, the girl can't help it. Little Richard on the horn.
Made
I see now why Jim wanted to hear that and wanted it played. Oh goodness me! It's a long distance dedication going out to Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman and Godzilla from Wasilla via the horn. Sorry, I have to use the creepy voice from time to time just to stay in practice. So. There we have pretty much the first couple of hours of the program. It's about 10 minutes before 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. At the same time that the conversation's going on, I'm sitting here. And again, I'm mystified because it's magic, because I don't fully understand it. I got John Fox, the Horn's webmaster, web designer, engineer, host in his own right, sitting in Australia, sending me settings for setting up the EQ. Just to tweak, because this is frankly as good as this has sounded via this rig in just about ever. And when it's like this, yeah, making it perfect becomes the goal or the ambition. So when we take a little break, I'm going to tweak a little bit further. John says the music sounds great. No more clippy shit. Yes, I know. And yeah, Friday it was sideways. Tonight it's perfect. Jesus, somebody find me some legitimate, honest to God, not veneer wood. Hang on. Yeah, I knocked wood. I'm superstitious. Right. But it's Moran Monday on the horn, and you're welcome to jump in to the program with your nominations, 304-658-3333, and doing that via remote connection to the boss, otherwise known as Agnes, in the studio. She is waiting for your calls, 304-658-3333. Barring that, of course, the Skype line is also open. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, is the Skype handle. Oh, and thank you. Thank you very much. A kind contribution coming in from Karen. Thank you, Karen. Hers is the first to roll this way this evening, and it is very much appreciated. And we can say roughly now that we're around the $280 mark get to the fundraising goal for the month of April. We're sprinting for the finish line, but you know what? It's better than being $1,000 away by far, and everything helps. So thank you. Thank you very much, Karen, for helping get us where we need to be. Oh, no. No, no. Wait, please, Sparky, please tell me the audio hasn't gone sideways. I see the Cylon image in the chat room and begin to get the get the dribbling dreads. By the way, the chat room is open if you want to jump in. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Easy and free. Oh, that's a sigh of relief. All right, all better. No, there are no Cylons in the, and that's damnably refreshing. Thanks, Marty. 5x5 here, Marty says. Appreciate it. So, okay, thank you, Agnes. So, barring phone calls coming in to 304-658-3333 or calls on the Skype line, either one, there are a couple of More Ann Monday stories that more than deserve being called out on this More Ann Monday. You may know, if you're familiar with the program, how much disdain I have held former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor in for, lo, these many years. What is it, 2013? Is it 10? About 12 years. Robert says it sounds fine in Australia. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much. For about 12 years now, I've pretty much openly despised Sandra Day O'Connor, because Sandra Day O'Connor is the person who gave us George W. Bush. And now, today, for reasons passing understanding, she has decided that this is I said that the epitaph on her tombstone, whenever it comes time for her to need one, really should be, you know, here lies Sandra Day O'Connor, first woman to sit on the Supreme Court, born, date, died, date, the woman who gave America George W. Bush. If one person can be said more than any other to have foisted George W. Bush upon the American people, it is, in fact, Sandra Day O'Connor, because she is the one who went along with the scam that was put forward by the right-wing weirdos. And now she's having second thoughts. The story I'm looking at comes from the Chicago Tribune, for what it's worth. But it's been all over the interweb tubes today. But it was an interview at the Chicago Tribune. Darlene Glanton, Chicago Tribune reporter, says retired U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor hasn't given, remember this is a More Ann Monday nomination, hasn't given much thought to which was the most important case she helped decide during her 25 years on the bench, but she has no doubt which was the most controversial. It was Bush v. Gore. Well, you know, you might say it was the most important, too, but she doesn't want to acknowledge that now, does she? You could say that it is a decision that launched America into a decade of war that has not closed yet. It was a decision that took what had been, for the first time in quite some time, a fiscally sound United States and cast it into the abyss. Because remember when George Bush said, the economy is running too hot, so we're gonna have a tax cut. It's your money, and we're going to give your money back to you because it's your money, and it'll cool the economy. And then later he said, yeah, the economy's cooling down, so we need some stimulus into the economy. We're going to give everybody a tax cut. Of course, the everybody's he was talking about were the 1%, while the rest of us got, what, $200, $300? Yeah, don't spend it all in one place, Rube. But it was a terribly important decision, and it was far too important a decision to be left to the naked, filthy nature of politics. And these judges who are supposed to be above it all because they're appointed for life and serve at good behavior just jumped right down and wallowed in the political filth like they'd been there all along, and maybe they were. Looking back, according to the article here, looking back, O'Connor said she isn't sure the high court should have taken the case, Bush v. Gore.
It took the case and decided it at a time when it was still a big election issue. Maybe the court should have said, we're not going to take it. Goodbye.
And the reason she's rethinking it? The case stirred up the public and gave the court a less than perfect reputation.
Oh, Margaret.
Yeah, obviously the court did reach a decision and thought it had to reach a decision. It turned out the election authorities in Florida hadn't done a real good job there and kind of messed it up, and probably the Supreme Court added to the problem at the end of the day.
Really? Really? The Supreme Court added to the problem? The Supreme Court put George W. Bush in office. The Florida Election Commission didn't do that. The Supreme Court did that. Added to the problem? No, Sandy. Created the problem. Remember the nature of the relief sought. George W. Bush brought that case to the Supreme Court pleading for an extraordinary writ, and they're called extraordinary writs for a reason. They don't just pop out of gumball machines. But pleading that he would be irreparably harmed if he, the loser of the election, was not made the president of the United States. Now, take that for just a minute and let it rattle around, just sort of like a roulette ball going around the wheel, just and oh, snake eyes. Oh, that's a different. Okay, that's dice, but whatever. I think we too easily forget the nature of the plea made by George Bush before the Supreme Court. I will be irreparably harmed if I, the loser of the election, am not made president anyway. Who was irreparably harmed? Yeah. The United States of America was irreparably harmed. Dear God, but she's rethinking it now, right? And she gave us a little bit of an insight into how decisions get made inside that temple of justice. She said while other members of the court never personally lobbied her for her vote, they did try to persuade her by including points in their written arguments that they believed she would support. Sometimes, she said, they were successful. Sometimes. So that means Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not so successful. Fat Tony Scalia, successful. Hey, Sandy. Yeah, here's a point from our brief that we want you to consider. That's a mighty nice house you got over there. Be a damn shame if the thing went up in flames, or be even worse if you woke up one morning and there was a horse's head in your bed. but that's okay. There are women serving on the Supreme Court, and she said, when I go and sit in the courtroom and look at the bench and see three women, it perks me up. It perks me up. I feel perky. And it's important to have women on the bench. It's important to have persons of color on the bench. It's important to have persons of faith on the bench. It would be kind of freaking nice if we could have a couple of unbelievers on the bench. But, you know, if we've got to have an Opus Dei majority on the court, well, it's Chinatown. Forget it, Jake. Perks me up. But see, that's one of those BS statements, because it would perk her up, you know, if, what? I don't know. I'm trying to think of a really, I don't know. If the female version of Genghis Khan was sitting on the bench, it would perk me up. Jesus. And she's out there hustling her iCivics online curriculum that's set up as a video game. You know, the new the Hepcats out there are all playing these video game thingies. We'll teach them about voting. And they can learn all they want to about voting, just so long as they never try to actually do it. Yeah, it's scream-inducing. But, Moran nomination for sure. Twelve years. And an America that still doesn't necessarily know what's going to become of it. And she's just not sure. Yeah, see, Jim says if only Sandra Day O'Connor would have just been a B-grade 50s movie star. That Supreme Court decision screwed this and other nations beyond the concept of screwed. Marty pointed out, and of course, revisionist historians like to shout that it was Gore who sued Bush at SCOTUS, despite it being plaintiff versus defendant. Well, yeah, there's that. So, 304-658-3333 is the number. If you want to jump into the program, you're more than welcome to. The Skype line is tied up right now. We'll take a break and come back to your calls. If you're on hold, please stay that way. This is Conversation Radio. We're trying to, we try to raise $150 a night. Right now we are at 20, and we're very grateful for the 20. And if you would, anyone wants to step up and help out and give that Andy Jackson some buddies to hang out with, it would be deeply appreciated. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
Took a drive into the sprawl to find the house where we used to stay. Couldn't read the number in the dark. You said let's save it for another day. Took a drive into the sprawl to find the places we used to play. It was the loneliest day of my life. take a drive through the sprawl to these towns that built the change. Then you said the emotions are dead. It's no wonder that you feel so strange. Cops shone their lights on the reflectors of our bikes. Said your kids know what time it is. Just punch the clock.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
And the time during the break was put to good use. John Fox had sent me some settings, and I put them into effect. Hopefully that helped. It is 15 minutes past the hour, and Agnes tells me that we have Kevin on the line. Just one second here. Are you there, Kevin?
Yep, just had to get to the... But I'm getting an echo, though.
Hopefully it'll sort itself out momentarily.
Yep, sounds like a nail. Okay, yep, working good.
Good. Been a while since we talked. How have you been?
Doing. April and March, probably two of the worst months so far this year for me, but... Working it through it and looking forward to May Day, where we may have snow on the ground. So, yeah, today the temperature is 84, but by Wednesday it will be probably 30 for the high.
Oh, dear.
And, of course, my family of right-wingers laugh at the, well, that's a little warming for you. It's getting cold. And you try to explain, but it's useless.
Largely, probably.
I mean, it just goes right over their heads that we're going to have all these wild weather swings, hot, cold, fiercer, more intense storms, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, like Grippio, I had never heard the word before last year. And apparently they're saying it's going to become common in our everyday language because of global warming.
I can't stand the thought, Kevin, of another one of those things ripping through, because the power lines where we live in Appalachia are basically strung through the woods on toothpicks as it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just... But, you know.
But that's not to say we don't pay a princely ransom for the for those toothpicks.
Well, sure. And, of course, if said storm knocks out power lines, then that's an excuse for them to raise the prices up.
And they're already working on it.
But they won't raise the prices. Like, I'm sure you wouldn't mind paying a dollar more if everybody paid a dollar more to actually create technology that wouldn't take out your power lines in a storm like...
Well,
rain.
Like I said, a derecho blows past a wind farm, and all the wind turbines do is make more electricity.
Exactly. And I was really proud of the Scottish people the other day when they told Donald Trump to...
get stuffed.
Stick it. You know, apparently he tried to claim the wind farms were quite unsightly, and the Scottish people said, no, they aren't, and we want our wind farms over your resort. So go somewhere else. And Donald apparently has rejection issues because he can't let that go. So
I don't know if it's rejection issues, Kevin, so much as... He thinks that the world operates on the same principles as the United States does.
Right.
To wit, that a sufficient amount of money will convey an impression of intelligence. A sufficient amount of money will convey an impression of worth, you know, beyond the mere dollars and cents accounting. That a sufficient amount of money will convey to one the right to dictate to the rest of the world. And while there's a lot of that that's true in the rest of the world,
sometimes in other countries, we tell the rich to go F themselves. And God bless the Scots if that's what they did. Well, Flying Spaghetti Monster, God, what have you.
Yeah, whatever, bless the Scots, however you say it, because that's what they did. And, you know, I'm sure he'll eventually try throwing more money at them, but he was none too pleased that they did that. And I was quite pleased about it. So, but mainly I just wanted to call in and say hello. It's been a while. I've been dealing with some stuff, and then you've been dealing with your thing up there in Washington. Did you get that link I sent to you this morning, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Good, good. So, I did see a mention in that article of Coal River Mountain Watch, but it kind of troubled me that the first person they let off with in that was someone from Sierra Club instead of CRMW. Because you all have been the one doing the lion's share of the work on this issue. So,
well, that individual who was quoted from the Sierra Club is kind of a gatekeeper on the issue, and she's not particularly good at listening to people who live with the problem. This isn't my own idea. This is a matter of something that's already been said. The big greens are not particularly good at listening to the people who have to deal with the problems themselves. This was detailed in a report over a year ago. But the fact of the matter is, that individual quoted in that article, whose name I will not mention, and not because I'm trying not to, but out of respect for another individual who has since passed on, that individual did untold damage last year when she wrote a blog post saying that mountaintop removal permits had, in her words, slowed to a trickle.
Yep.
And she had a lot of people bamboozled into thinking it was more or less over so we could go on and work on something else. Well, nothing could be further from the truth.
Yep. I mean, you remember those two emails that I sent last year. And we are literally talking about last year that I sent those, or at least at the beginning of this year. I still never to this day have gotten a reply from them at all.
Don't expect one, Kevin.
No, I didn't, but it's just interesting to note that, you know, we've got to qualify by saying that it is good that they are participating in the fight.
Sure, sure it is. And, you know, I'm glad they're saving the wolves. I like wolves. I like them. I like them a long way away from me. But I acknowledge the place of a wolf on this planet. I acknowledge, you know, like my acknowledging matters for anything. But I like polar bears. And
yep.
I like all kinds of critter life. And I think biodiversity is a really, really good thing. I am, at the end of the day, however, a humanist.
Yep.
And that is not to say that I'm necessarily anthropocentric, but it's that whole if a tree falls in a forest thing. I want to see the species survive.
Yep.
And, let's put it this way. I don't put the poisoning of the innocent people of an entire region as being the equal of saving
the whatever.
Yeah.
You're talking about the human species, and you're talking about humans and animals both being poisoned by some idiot removing a mountaintop and then dumping it into a stream where all those toxins infect everybody from humans down to ants, you know? And that's what struck me about that one article, is that they saw nothing wrong with doing it. forget the permits, the permitting, that there are human beings on this earth that see nothing wrong with destroying nature, but in the process destroying ourselves by doing what they're doing. And that's what just blows me away, is that, you know, there's a lot of things I could do wrong, but I couldn't consciously say to someone, I'm going to do this mountaintop removal. First of all the chemicals that are in that and the blasting into the air, and you're going to get that poisoning, but then we're going to take the mountain and dump it into the streams and rivers, and all those toxins are going to go into your water supply as well. You know, that's mass murder.
Right. It goes back to a comparison, and I haven't seen that anybody's been jailed or even indicted over the explosion in Texas. Nor will anyone likely do the perp walk. I've seen reports saying, well, you know, this is the failure of the regulators. Excuse me? You know, you sit there, the Rick Perrys and the Gohmerts and the Goobers and the, hey, the Goober, talk about, you know, job-killing regulations. And then, in an instant when those regulations and the enforcement of them could have saved lives, they turn around and say, well, it's the Fed. Where was the inspectors?
Yep.
And it's a matter of having your cake and blowing it up too.
I know. And
there are problems that run even deeper, Kevin. And I hesitate to go too deeply into this. I think maybe tomorrow night, when my colleague Bo is back up here, I might set up a second microphone and just see. Maybe we'll have a conversation about it. But the AIC Act is the only thing we've got that will end mountaintop removal. And there's going to be a whole bunch of people in this town next week who are supporting a piece of legislation that's over 10 years old that is not, it's not going anywhere, it's never going to go anywhere, and it's not going to end mountaintop removal. It'll end some, but not all. And so that means it's freighted with a moral issue. How do you say that we'll end it for a certain group of people being poisoned, but you tell another group of people being poisoned, we're going to let them keep poisoning you?
Yeah, exactly. And as far as the Texas thing goes, Bob, my feeling is that even if there are no regulations, you, as the owner of that company, have a moral obligation to make sure your employees are in a safe environment. I mean, there were violations that were just atrocious. No blast walls to prevent the blast from spreading. Just generally no regulation at all. No thought for safety at all. And I've worked for some employers that, to their credit, they did think about the safety of the employees. They did put it above the cost of doing business. They just modeled it into their cost of doing business. And it was part of what they did. And, you know, I never have had to work for, I can't think of anyone offhand that I worked for that just totally disregarded regulations like that guy down in Texas. And if he was in China, you know, that guy'd be on trial today probably, because they may be doing the same things, but when something like that happens, they arrest the guy, you know. They don't fool around. And here in America, money talks. It talks to the extent of you can get away with killing literally thousands of human beings if you want, by mountaintop removal or deregulation of whatever kind. So,
Yeah.
It just, I don't know. I'm hopeful. I think the Colbert election in South Carolina, isn't that next week?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the Markey election up in Boston is sometime next week, too, isn't it?
It's right around the corner, at the very least.
I'm hopeful those two seats will go to the Democrats. I can't imagine that Sanford's going to win that one with the things he's done this past week. But maybe, slowly but surely, we're
well, you know, this will be a this will be kind of a watershed, Kevin, for just how much because, you know, we've talked in the past about how I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, you know, it's okay if you're a Republican.
Yep.
And generally speaking, if you've got a wide stance or you go hiking the Appalachian Trail and that turns out to be a euphemism for having a years-long affair with a woman, not your wife, and you're a Republican, you can say, Jesus has forgiven me. And they'll generally return you to your office. I mean, I see a guy in here from time to time who literally showed up on the client list of a famous, now dead, local madam. I mean, he was flat out outed, and he held a press conference to say, and he was a family values Republican, mind you.
Yeah, well, they always are, apparently.
And he said, and he, you know, he pulled a Jimmy Swaggart and said, I have sinned against you. And he made his poor wife stand up there next to him. And you know what? And you know what the people of Louisiana did? They promoted him to senator.
Yep.
So this is going to be a test case on how much crappy, sleazy behavior Republicans will tolerate. I mean, frankly, Mrs. Colbert Bush should win going away, and I don't even know if she's got a progressive bone in her body, but she should win going away just because she's not this asshat. But if the fundies, Kevin, and the floor rollers and the strychnine swillers and the tongue speakers decide that Jesus has forgiven him, well, let's send him to Congress. And nothing should be taken for granted in that circumstance.
And if President Clinton in the White House is accused of having an affair with an intern, God doesn't forgive him.
No. God doesn't forgive that. God only forgives. God only forgives those whom his followers declare he forgives. And that may generally be said only to be Republicans.
Right, exactly. And if a Democrat got up there and did what the guy from Louisiana did or Swaggart did, the Republicans would react, oh, it's just fake, it's blah, blah, blah. You know, they wouldn't even consider taking that as an actual apology. Now, speaking of apologies, I got to mention the Sandra Day O'Connor thing. It's nice she apologized. But how do you take back 12 years of what has been taken from us? You don't. And when I heard that this morning, I thought, why even bother to do the apology? This is something you can't make right. You made your bed, lie in it, because had Al Gore been president, we would have gone a completely different direction. And instead, you were swayed, and you admitted you were swayed. So, you know, it's nice that you said you apologized, but I didn't see the point in it, considering that you can't undo.
Well, it's not, but it's not even a complete apology, Kevin. It's, maybe it wasn't the smartest thing. Maybe we should have just told him to go pound sand. Well, you know, the court votes on whether or not to even hear a case.
Mm-hmm.
So until we know what her vote was on whether or not to hear that case, those words ring more than a little bit hollow.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the hardest thing I have is just why come out and do the apology? You know, maybe.
Well, I'll tell you why.
I don't know.
She's 83 years old. She's 83 years old, Kevin, and she knows that her time on this planet is not long, and she would really prefer not to be remembered as the single human being who, in the stroke of a pen, did more to harm the United States than anybody since Adolf Hitler.
Yep.
But that's her, and Godwin's law be damned in this instance.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's my take.
Well, yeah. I still have it's a good point. You're 83, but, you know, I don't know.
What I think it says to me, Kevin, is this. She knew it was wrong when she did it.
Right.
But she did it anyway because she was letting politics come before her sworn duty, her oath, and what she knew to be the difference between right and wrong.
Right.
You know, it's like Jim just wrote in, he said, would to God she was the only one who had to lie in that bed. Thanks Sandra Day O'Connor for nothing. Because even though she was the swing vote on some votes relating to some decisions relating to a woman's right to choose, all of that stuff, to my way of thinking, and not being female, I realize my opinion may be A, less than valid, and B, skewed. Every good thing that woman ever did in her life, if she rescued a kitten from a tree at some point in her life, if she pushed a baby carriage out of the way of a speeding taxi cab at some point in her life, it all comes to naught in that moment when she threw ethics and conscience and jurisprudence and decency and, frankly, patriotism to the four winds to satisfy the shitty, craven, miserable, godforsaken political will of fat Tony Scalia.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm preaching. I apologize.
Oh, well, it needs to be said. I don't normally have this much of a problem with people apologizing, but it doesn't even ring hollow with me. There's something about it that just doesn't sit well with me. And I think it might be what you just said about she knew it was wrong when she did it. And if you knew it was wrong when you did it, then you had a choice of doing it or not.
Right. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa works fine in the confessional. But it's not so good in the temporal world when, in fact, the lie... My God, if you were her, Kevin, how could you sleep at night? She, by virtue of what she did to give us George W. Bush, took 5,000 brothers, sons, cousins, nephews, uncles, nieces, aunts, sisters, daughters, mothers, fathers. She took 5,000 of those away from the families who love them. She did that. Because she empowered that little pissant pinhead whom they installed as president. You know, I saw a headline over at The Onion, and every now and then they get a little too close to the truth, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw this just a couple of days ago. Oh, God, where is it? It's Every living ex-president gathers to lie about George W. Bush's accomplishments or something like that. And I thought, Jesus Christ, that's not comedy, that's not satire, that's not parody, that's the truth.
Yeah, and you know, people question from time to time an Onion article as to whether it's an Onion article or the real thing. Well, in that case, you knew it was an Onion article, but it still was the real thing. There was no, you can't do satire or something like that because it was just the God honest truth. It was another case of people praising someone that deserves to be indicted and does not deserve any praise whatsoever for the things he did from the time he took office. And, you know, I kind of understand why Clinton and Obama and Carter were there. I kind of get
Jimmy
it.
Carter was there because Jimmy Carter is probably the most decent human being that we have among our living ex-presidents. Jimmy Carter's still a Sunday school teacher. Jimmy Carter is not prone to say poopy if he has a mouthful. On the other hand, I remember the way that Bill Clinton lionized the dead, filthy, stinking, rotting corpse of Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
And I remember the unending national grief orgy over that monster Ronald Reagan. And, you know, if you're an ex-president, you show up because there just aren't a whole lot of members of that club. But to get up there and lie, oh.
Yeah, and that's what drives progressives, true progressives nuts, is you didn't have to get up. You could have got up there and still said some niceties without having to.
Oh, sure. You know, you get up there and say, I just want to say that I've been through this library and there's some of the finest comic books known to. It's one of the finest comic book collections known to man.
Right.
But in point of fact, that BS business, Kevin, about he kept us safe and how, you know, we didn't have any terrorist attacks under George W. Bush, you know, except the one that killed 5,000 people or 3,000 people, right?
Yep. Yeah. Well, he kept us safe after 9/11, yeah, but 9/11 didn't need to happen. He ignored every report on it saying that Bin Laden was determined to strike. So, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to call and say hello because I haven't called in for a while, and I'll be taking a couple weeks this month to go visit relatives, so I'll still be here for a while, though. But, you know, if you don't hear me, I hope to be back in the Horn Molloy chat room by the end of the month. Like I said, March and April were not good to me at all, so... I haven't forgot about them. I just have not been able to get anything fixed or.
No, understood. No worries.
But I miss it. I miss the Friday night getting together and talking with people. So let you know I'm thinking about you. But right now,
things have been so harem scarum lately. I haven't been in there forever, and I feel terrible. But it's just all I can plead is it's been a crazy, 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 crazy world.
I missed the right at the top of the show. How long are you going to be in Washington all week this weekend, week two? Or?
No, I hope not. Possibly. Well. It looks like, with any luck at all, we're out of here. And if we get out of here early enough Wednesday morning, then that means I can be home in time for showtime Wednesday evening.
Good, good.
But that means getting out of here 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah, there we
Hopefully
go.
Hopefully you will be able to do that.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, good to hear from you. And yep, we will.
Hear Bill today, too. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, that reminds me. He won't be on the air tomorrow, but I think we've gotten the majority of our technical gremlins dealt with until I can get back to the home studios, and Agnes has done a yeoman job in that regard. Bill won't be live tomorrow, but he will be live on Wednesday.
Yeah, I was actually talking about Bill in Cleveland, but Bill.
Oh, Bill O'Brien. Cool. Yeah, Bill and yeah, Bill. Okay. Well, yeah, both of them, right?
Yeah, both of them, but it's been kind of hard to connect with the Dr. Bill thing lately because of the technical glitches and because of my schedule. And it seems like the day he's on, something comes up. You know, invariably something comes up. I get it comes on at one here and or two, and depending on what he's doing. And invariably something comes up at the start of the show. So speaking of that Prism History series, any more scheduled for the month?
There's one coming Saturday.
Okay.
Which would be 1 o'clock your time.
Okay. Yep, I haven't figured out technically, I guess I can listen to it and that, but there's some of the things that, like getting through to him or whatever, doing the chat, because he talks most of the time. I don't know how to explain it, but I just haven't been able to figure out how to do the chat when I have had the chance to sit down and listen.
Right.
Part of that is because of the content. I go back to a thing where, you know, hey, don't be upset because you're not getting phone calls. It's because we like what we're engrossed in what you're saying.
Precisely.
You know, so, but, yeah, I've had some technical issues with my machines here, so that's a huge part, too, of why I haven't been incommunicado lately. So, but anyway, look forward to hearing you, and I will talk to you later on this week, hopefully.
All right, Kevin. You have a good evening, my friend.
And all my best to the Horn family.
Sure thing. You take care. Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs, and just in the little bit of time that remains to us, lines are open, 304-658-3333. It is about 11 minutes and change before the hour. But it's still more and Monday. And if we can, let's see if we can't work one more nominee in, because the guy in question is Rick Perry. This nomination coming in from our buddy Marty. Rick Perry was the subject of an editorial cartoon recently related to the West Texas explosion. It was published in the Sacramento Bee. It is a full-color cartoon. Panel one shows Rick Perry standing in front of a banner that says, "Low tax, low regs." And the dialogue balloon says, "Business is booming in Texas." And in the second panel, a huge explosion with a great big red boom. And Rick Perry silhouetted against his podium with his necktie flying out and the little low regs banner getting blown into the next county. And Rick Perry, who has the cognitive skills of paramecium, perhaps, if that's not too much of a dinger on the paramecia of the world. Cartoon was by Jack Oman, and he said the purpose of it was to point out Rick Perry's hypocritical stance about, you know, we ain't got no regulations. Perry did not like being depicted in a light that was most resembling of the truth. So he fired off a letter to the Sacramento Bee newspaper. Rick never having apparently been told that you do not start wars with people who buy ink by the gallon. Re, business is booming in Texas, editorial cartoon, April 25th. Rick Perry wrote with his trusty crayon, it was with extreme disgust and disappointment I viewed your recent cartoon. While I will always welcome healthy policy debate, I won't stand for someone mocking the tragic deaths of my fellow Texans and our fellow Americans. Well, Rick, you godforsaken dumbass, no one was mocking the tragic deaths, as you put it, of your fellow Texans and our fellow Americans. No one was mocking that at all. What was being mocked, Rick, was you. You running around talking about how California businesses need to move to Texas because of all them lower taxes, you know, because people make shit for wages in your state. Rick, crayon gripped firmly betwixt his toes, continued and said, additionally, publishing this on the very day our state and nation paused to honor and mourn those who died only compounds the pain and suffering of the many Texans who lost family and friends in this disaster. The Bee owes the community of West Texas an immediate apology for your detestable attempt at satire. Now, if you believe that at any point in time, if you believe that any word other than the scrawling of Rick underneath the text was actually authored by Rick Perry, well, Swampland, Arizona, you, me, I got the deed, you got the money, good, we're ready to go. Apparently, the Sacramento Bee didn't, and this is one of those, we started the program with a little golf clap moment. Let's end the program with the same. Because Stuart Leavenworth is the editorial page editor of the Sacramento Bee, and he responded to Gubner Goodhair, and he said, Jack Oman's cartoon of April 25th made a strong statement about Governor Rick Perry's disregard for worker safety, which is a fact. That's not a political opinion. It is a fact. In Texas, there's no such thing as worker safety. There's only the free market. Jack Oman's cartoon of April 25th made a strong statement about Governor Rick Perry's disregard for worker safety and his attempts to market Texas as a place where industries can thrive with few regulations. It is unfortunate that Governor Perry and some on the blogosphere have attempted to interpret the cartoon as being disrespectful of the victims of this tragedy. As Oman has made clear on his blog, he has complete empathy for the victims and people living by the plant. What he finds offensive is a governor who would gamble with the lives of families by not pushing for the strongest safety regulations. Perry's letter is an attempt to distract people from that message. P.S. Rick, we buy ink by the barrel. Because, see, I know that Rick Perry is a hypocrite, because I know that if I sat down and tried to explain to him what it means to have 4,000 excess deaths every year in mountaintop removal communities, well, you and I both know what the response to that would be. Well, that might be too bad. That's just too bad. But you know what? It'd be devastating. It'd be devastating to end mountaintop removal. It'd be devastating to the West Virginia economy. We need that domestic energy supply. Yeah, yeah, but Rick, it's the same kind of explosions that could, well, that was an accident. What's happening to you, sugar, is just business. And business is the most important thing in the whole ding-danged world. Didn't you know that? Brother. Rick Perry knew he was skewered. Thanks, Marty, for sending that along for our last nomination tonight. Rick Perry knew that he was skewered. He was as gigged as a frog. And what that was him a-flopping around on the tines. And it is, by God, a skewering he richly deserved. So we find ourselves at the end of the program. Thank you, Karen, very much for helping out during the program with your kind contribution. Hopefully your contribution will get some friends in the coming hours, and we will not finish April in a hole. As it stands, we need to raise about $280 between now and midnight on the 30th. That's how we keep it all going here. Thank you, everyone, for your kind contribution of your ideas, your thoughts, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room, the very, very precious and finite time that I know, you can do with anything you please, but that you share in this little conversation means more than you can ever possibly know. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox, on the job even during the live program, making things sound real pretty here now that we got the machine all tweaked up real nice. And that's the good kind of tweaking, not the bad kind of tweaking. Thank you, John. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and yes, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.